Welcome back to the National Defense. It's Randy Miller. Okay, so, you know, I love a great podcast. I love finding out about things that you had no idea about. This is one of those. And starring in this is Kyle MacLachlan. You know him, of course, from Twin Peaks and so many other great pieces of work. The Doors, one of my favorites. And then Joshua Davis, investigative reporter. And they have a brand new podcast called Varnum Town. And welcome to the program, guys. Kyle, Josh, how are you?
Good morning, Randy. This is Kyle. Feeling good. Thanks for having us on. Really appreciate it.
Thanks. Yeah.
Kyle, you like a good, strong cup of coffee, don't you?
I've got one right in front of me.
Excellent.
Randy, thank you for asking. How about yourself?
Same here. Absolutely.
Good.
Hey, let's start out with location-wise. So Varnum Town, North Carolina, is this sleepy little city, and this appeals to me so much because I've got some great friends that live in Carolina Beach that not only knew nothing about the story, but also had no idea where Varnum Town is, and it's about an hour away from them, right?
That's amazing. Yeah,
Carolina Beach is just outside Wilmington, where we actually filmed Blue Velvet. Back in the 80s, mid-80s,
right.
In fact, right about the time that the story that we discovered, that Josh and I discovered, was happening. And yeah, it's an hour's drive. We had no idea what was going down south of us. But no surprise, because as you mentioned, Varnum Town, it's a very small little community, about 300 people. Shrimp fishing, of course, or shrimping is the main industry there. And it's a tough way to make a buck. and so there begins to explain a little bit about why things happened the way they did and why the people, did what they did.
So, Josh, you're an investigative journalist and Kyle comes to you with this story about this little town being connected with, of all people, Pablo Escobar. What was your first reaction?
I thought he was lying. Yeah, you do this professionally.
Yeah, right.
Exactly.
Yeah, I was captured. I mean, like the idea that Pablo Escobar would do a deal en masse with a town of 300 people seems crazy. How is that possible?
Right. Without anybody else knowing about it.
Without anybody knowing about it, and nobody's heard about this over the last 30 years, it seems crazy. I'm a reporter, so I dug into it a little bit and discovered that the DEA was extremely active in the area at that time. There were lots and lots of arrests, hundreds of arrests, or hundreds of charges were filed anyway, and prosecutions. I mean, the prosecutor in the area at the time was Mike Easley, who went on to become the governor of North Carolina.
Wow. 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 We're talking to Kyle MacLachlan and Joshua Davis here in the National Defense, their new podcast called Varnum Town. I just listened to the first episode, the REO episode, and even more bizarre stuff, Kyle. REO Speedwagon's airplane is involved.
Yes, one of my bands that I really enjoyed.
Oh, me too.
Back in the day. Back in the 70s. And so the plane that we're talking about belonged at one time to REO Speedwagon. It was one of the touring planes, evidently.
The big logo on the side and everything.
Oh, yeah. The whole thing looked exactly the same. This plane was part of this operation, had made a landing, a very bumpy landing, on a small field outside of Varnum Town, it was ultimately confiscated, but people didn't know what to make of this. The fact that the plane that looks like the band REO Speedwagon was coming to Varnum Town was actually used at that time to transport, it was a drug smuggling plane, so full of marijuana and other substances.
REO Speedwagon had sold the plane, but they'd forgotten to take their logo off.
I always thought that was pretty good cover. You know, if they'd put the if they put Pablo Escobar's logo on the side of the plane, probably not so easy to get down in the States. But REO Speedwagon, everyone wants REO Speedwagon to come to their town, right?
Right, right. So Kevin Cronin does not live in Varnum Town. Have you established that?
No, you're right.
What I was wondering was maybe Pablo Escobar was a big REO Speedwagon.
Right. Well, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, maybe that's why he bought it.
Their tour.
Hey, and Josh, when you guys actually went to Varnum Town then and talked to a guy named Lefty, and this guy was also fascinating because he verified basically everything that you guys were suspecting, right?
Yeah. My skepticism over what went down kind of melted away as we started talking to people. Lefty said, yeah, this became a major transshipment site for cocaine on the Eastern Seaboard. Essentially, when things got too hot in Miami in the 1980s, when the DEA cracked down on Miami and South Florida, the cartels got smart and said, we got to go find a place. They learned their lesson. Like, don't go somewhere where there's a lot of eyes. Don't go somewhere where there's a lot of people. Go somewhere that's remote, that's quiet, that's out of the way. And it turns out this town of Varnum Town, 300 people, is at the northern limit of how far the REO Speedwagon plane can fly from Barranquilla, Colombia.
And Kyle, you grew up in a small town. I grew up in Knoxville, Tennessee, a southern small town. Mm. And I can see, when I was a kid, I could see that happening in Knoxville. I mean, everybody on board.
Yeah, and so much of what the environment was at that time in the mid 80s for the industry, the main industry there in Varnum Town being, of course, shrimping. It was in not a very good state. And people didn't really know. It was difficult to make a living shrimping anyway, but in this case, it was even more challenging. So when this opportunity came, presented to them by one of the local guys who had sort of he sort of figured out that this is what we should do. People were like, I had no problem with that. I got no problem helping out. And, so you're right. We could both, after visiting there, understand, I could see where this would happen.
Yeah. And the story came to you from a person you knew that owns an organic soap company, which is even, you could throw everything bizarre into this story.
I know exactly what you're going to say. It's and that's how we felt. The more we dug into the story, Josh and I, and the more people we spoke with, the more we heard, their version, what had happened to them. The more we came away with, said this is growing and expanding in a way that we had no idea. The story really opened up to us. And I got to say, the people were really, really forthcoming in what they said, their experiences. And that was that really helped us move the story forward and tell the story in an interesting way.
We're talking to Kyle McLaughlin and Joshua Davis here in the National Defense, their podcast, Varnum Town. And Josh, this has got to be, for any other town, to have Kyle McLaughlin show up at your door and talking about Pablo Escobar would be something out of the ordinary. But to these people, it's got to be just another Tuesday.
There was a lot of blinking. They were just like, they couldn't quite figure out what was happening. There was somebody said to Kyle, hey, does anybody ever tell you you look a lot like Kyle McLaughlin?
And of course I answered, yes, I hear that frequently.
You're right, right. hey, Mom, the guy from Twin Peaks is here.
Again. We saw him up in Wilmington a few, 20, 30 years ago. He's back. Oh, my God.
And Josh, just to kind of, put a exclamation point on this, too. You're doing a deal with Pablo Escobar, this drug cartel lord who kills people. And so I know when you talk to Lefty, who lives in Varnum Town, I mean, he sounded pretty frightened.
He was terrified. He was terrified. To him, it sounded like a death sentence. That's the phrase he used. But as Kyle says, the town was desperate. They'd fallen on hard times. They'd had some bad shrimping seasons. And desperate times require desperate measures.
Yeah.
So, you know, they felt like Pablo Escobar was the solution to all of their problems.
And as Lefty tells it too, everybody in town was a drug lord. Everybody's selling drugs.
There was that's what fascinated me. What happens when you take a tiny town, 300 people, and just open up a fire hose of cocaine and money? It sounds like a recipe for something.
The beginnings of Las Vegas.
Yeah, that's how Las Vegas was founded.
Right. And Kyle, you're just kind of interested in these kinds of things, right?
Well, you know, I've played a number of characters over the years that have been drawn to darker stories, you know, more unusual, strange stories. I mean, you mentioned Twin Peaks, of course, playing Dale Cooper. The FBI agent in that. And it seemed to fit at least my acting world. You know, in my personal life, I'm also curious about, you know, just interesting, unusual stories. I mean, this is the world that I work in, you know, finding things and telling them in an interesting, compelling way. So when I heard about this, I said, you know, this is really, I think this is something worth investigating. And I said, I'm not the investigative reporter side of things, you know, I've got to play another role in this, but I know a guy, and like a guy that I think would be really fun to go into this world with. And that's Joshua Davis.
Well, there was a funny moment when I looked over at Kyle, cause we're going to interview a DEA agent. And I said, you've played a federal agent on TV for a long time. You must have had a lot of experience with federal agents. And Kyle's like, no, this is the first time I'm sitting down to talk to a federal agent. So well, listeners will get the pleasure of that.
There's a lot of mystery around Twin Peaks. I went into a restaurant called Twin Peaks and it had nothing to do with the show.
Oh, I think I know the one you mean.
I mean, I had to stay there for a while and investigate myself. But
of course you did. Of course you did. You spent a couple hours.
Well, I admit, overnight. Anyway, boy, you guys have done such a great job on this podcast. I mean, I just started listening this morning and I could not turn it off. It is so fascinating to me. And it's amazing. I mean, Josh, it has to kind of amaze you that, and there are a lot of podcasts kind of out there like this, where they take this material that you've never heard about. You go, how can this be? How can nobody else know about this?
Yeah, it's true. For me, what was interesting is I had heard stories that maybe were adjacent to this. There's that Tom Cruise movie called American Made, where it's a true story about the town of Mena, Arkansas. Mena is population roughly 50,000. So that's a pretty sizable place. Right. It's not 300 people. And I guess what started to reveal itself to us as we got to Varnamtown and spoke to people was everybody knew each other. It's super tight knit. And the question becomes, they've done this deal. The drugs have started to come in. And now what does it do to the town? What does it do to neighborhood relationships, family relationships. I mean, in the end, we discovered it turned brother against brother.
Oh, I'll bet. Mm. I'll bet. Yeah. Wow. Yep. This is great stuff. It's called Varnamtown. And what, three episodes out now?
Three out now. And the fourth comes out tomorrow. And there's eight in total.
Oh, man, that's so cool. Well, thank you guys so much for the time. Kyle, Josh, best of luck on Varnamtown. I can't wait to get back to it.
Thank you, Randy. Really appreciate you having us on. Thank you.
Absolutely. We'll be right back here on the National Defense.